Mr. Relevant on your Wednesday. I'm Alex Stroff with you from the Everlight Solar Studio in downtown Madison, as always, joined alongside by the great producer Tiny Hands, our guy Hunter Vaughn, in the building, as always, with us here in downtown Madison. Fun show for you ahead. We're going to talk a lot of Bucks. Chris Johnson from the Here District podcast on the Bucks Plus Audio Network is going to join us, the son of Marcus Johnson, of course, who you hear on Bally Sports Wisconsin. Chris, a NCAA champion back in the 90s with UCLA, who's coming to the Big Ten. Might have to get his thoughts on that. Will join us in about 15 minutes to talk all things Bucks, who have won six in a row now after a win over the Clippers on Monday night. I'm glad I went back on my take, right? Like, I had the take a couple weeks ago where I said they're going to win five in a row out of the All-Star break. They're going to lose on March 4th to the Clippers. I say on March 4th, they're not losing to the Clippers. They win without Giannis. We'll see if Giannis plays tonight as they head to Golden State to take on the Warriors. Fun game tonight on ESPN between the Bucks and the Warriors, but the Bucks are fully back. We'll dive into that in just a second. I also want to play a game today. After Chris joins us, we are going to look at 11 quarterbacks, a mixture of rookies and free agents and other quarterbacks that will likely not remain with the team they are currently on. And we will predict. We will predict who is going to end up where. We will do that after Chris joins us. But first, I would like to talk about my drive into work today, because driving is always fun. You always pick up stories. You know, as I drive, I think, okay, what do I want to do on the show today? What do I need to do at work today? Right? Stuff like that. You clear the brain a little bit. And I have about a 12 minute drive into the office. Right by my house is an on ramp to a highway. And I was in the right lane, so I'm going past the on ramp. The on ramp is in the left lane. But I see a car at a red light, and then they pull onto the on-ramp, so I got a good view of the car. I'm not going to tell you their license plate, but I do have a fascination with vanity plates, people that customize their license plate. It's always something that's fascinated me. It's something I will never do. It's just straight up how that will be. I will never get a custom plate. I think if you get a custom plate, it's usually pretty strange. I have one of my best friends in the entire world. He drives a Jaguar, and his license plate is very late. V-E-R-Y-L-8. I will tell you his. Very late. And he thinks it's hilarious. He is always late, so I get it. But, come on.
You know, I'm surprised you wouldn't get one, given how big your ego can be at times.
Yeah, but what would I put on it?
I don't know, but you'd figure out something.
Just like my last name? Just
yeah.
Rutledge has that already.
You know? Yeah, and you kind of want to be like Rutledge, so.
Yeah, we both know that's not true. I am curious, though, you know, why people do it. So the one I saw today, now this was a car with an Iowa license plate, I believe. It might have been a Wisconsin license plate, but there was Iowa Hawkeye decals all over the back of the car. And the license plate was, I have to tell you, TD Hawks, Touchdown Hawks. Touchdown for the Hawkeyes.
That's pretty rare.
I drove past them and just laughed. And I don't know why. I don't think they looked at me. Both, there was a man and a woman in the front of the car. They looked at me and saw me laughing hysterically. And I don't think they understood what I was laughing at. Because the Hawkeyes don't score touchdowns.
Ever.
Right.
Like, that's never been their thing.
Right. Ever. Right. Like, and this was a newer car, so I assume the license plate is relatively new. And I just don't know if they understood the irony of the fact that their license plate indicated the worst Power 5 offense in college football this year. So I got a kick out of that this morning on my drive into work.
I mean, at least, like, they're really willing to go out there for their team. Because, like, either you know that they're terrible on offense and you're just like, you know what, I'm going to kind of play into it a little bit and make it a joke. Or you're just a delusional fan that, like, thinks Iowa actually scores touchdowns.
No, I don't think it's delusion. I think it's more so they're just very proud. Probably an alum, I would assume, considering all the Iowa decals on the
There
back.
Are a lot of Iowa alums in the Madison area.
I mean, that makes sense. It's a relatively close state, no?
Yeah, but, like, it's surprised me how many. Like, I would expect some. But it's kind of surprised me how many Hawkeye stickers I see when I'm driving.
I guess I'll keep an eye on that. I don't know that I've
ever
noticed.
You're going to see
a lot. But TD Hawks, I really got a kick out of that this morning. So I just wanted to share that story off the top. The other thing I'm enjoying the hell out of on March 6th is the fact that basketball is everything, from college to the NBA. You always make fun of me, Hunter, for being an NBA guy, claim to be an NBA guy. I admittedly did not know who Dean Wade was until last night, who had a great game for the Cavs in a win over the Celtics last night. 23 points, his career high, went to Kansas State, learned all this within the last 24 hours. Dean Wade comes out of nowhere, right? I mentioned Marcus Damask, who beat up on the Badgers for Illinois on Saturday at the Kohl Center. I watched Purdue-Illinois last night. Marcus Damask, although Illinois fell, the Waupun native, terrific game for him. So I already forecast it. Illinois going to go to the Sweet 16, maybe even the Elite Eight. Marcus Damask going to be a hero of March. You heard it here first. I am confident in that prediction that Marcus Damask is going to be like this. Just he's going to be all over one shining moment at the end of the tournament. I just love the level of hoops that is played in the month of March. So we have some of the conference tournaments starting up. I saw a crazy buzzer beater from half court. I don't even know. It might not have even been a real school. It was a Division I tournament. UC something or other hit a nice buzzer beater from half court.
Oh, I was going to say, I know Lipscomb got upset.
That was it. That was it.
Oh, yeah. They got upset. It was like Lipscomb a floater. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. Yep. It was that video. So we've got shenanigans and crazy stuff happening all over the place. The real conference tournaments start early next week. You have selection Sunday in a week and a half.
Disrespectful.
Why was that disrespectful?
The real conference tournaments, these are still real conferences. These are still conference tournaments. You don't have to disrespect the Atlantic Sun Conference.
Yeah, who from the Atlantic Sun is winning the NCAA tournament, Hunter?
That doesn't matter.
It's yes, it still, does.
They work just as hard as the Badgers do, as Illinois does.
I agree.
Like, don't disrespect their conference.
No.
You're being disrespectful, and I'm not going to have
You're
it.
You're looking at this the wrong way.
I'm not.
You're looking at this the wrong way. Because I say the real conference tournament, because RIP to the Pac-12, but the final year of the Pac-12 tournament, Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Big East.
So the power conference tournaments.
Yes, but the conferences that are going to birth the eventual national champion, yes, is what I'm referring to.
Okay, but that doesn't matter because the other schools still have real tournaments. Still matter. It still counts.
We had UW-Green Bay head coach Sonny Wicks.
Yeah, you tell Sonny Wicks that the Horizon League tournament doesn't matter.
It matters in order to get into the dance. But look, I love Sonny Wicks, and he was just announced on I think it was yesterday or 2 days ago, as the Horizon League Coach of the Year. And he is one of the most exciting, fun interviews we've done in the 6 months of the show. But I am not expecting UW-Green Bay to be alive in weekend two if they win the Horizon League tournament. So yeah, it's real, but... And don't get me wrong, it's exciting. Like, I'll watch it, right? And I might find a team that I'm like, oh, Cinderella potential. I'm going to pick them to upset a 4 seed in the first round. But I'm not picking them to go to the Final Four. Although this might be a year in which I should do that. So maybe I am being disrespectful. You actually might be onto something. I'm coming around to what you're saying. I'd like to apologize to all the mid-major conferences that I've disrespected in my opening tangent here. I believe in you. And Hunter does it, but I do.
What? I'm literally the one standing for mid-major conferences. I'm the one texting people in the office when it's a Thursday night and there's Maction going on.
Yeah, that's fair.
And I'm like, I'm hardcore into Central Michigan taking on Toledo in the snow. Like, don't go out there and say that I don't believe in mid-majors. I love mid-majors. I worked for a mid-major.
Which mid-major did you work for?
UW-Green Bay.
Uh-huh.
I did men's and women's soccer and volleyball.
Yeah, you did. I love it. All right, we'll talk more college hoops Friday. Badgers play tomorrow at home against Rutgers. I'm going to miss it, unfortunately. I've got a high school basketball game I've got to get to, Stoughton Mount Horeb. So Badgers Kohl Center finale is tomorrow against Rutgers, a team that smoked them a couple weeks back, probably about a month ago now. I think they lost by 22 in Piscataway. Really ugly game. It was the only Badgers game I have turned off while it's been on this year. I have not turned off a game until its conclusion except the Rutgers game. I went and got an oil change instead about a month ago. So hopefully they can rebound because they've lost 7 of their last 9. They need a win bad tomorrow against Rutgers before heading to number 3 Purdue on Sunday. So we'll talk more college hoops on Friday ahead of the Badgers regular season finale coming up on Sunday. I do want to talk Bucks, though, because they win again on Monday night in an incredible, incredible way, right? Like, they were down, I think, 15. They go on a 16-0 run in the fourth quarter. You have this tremendous energy being shown by Bobby Portis and Pat Bev, and Damian Lillard seems to be getting his rhythm back, especially on the offensive end. And Hunter sent me this terrific quote that I had not seen from Damian Lillard, which he said in his postgame press conference. I believe this was Monday night, Hunter.
Yeah, I couldn't find the exact date on it, but it was either Monday or
last
after
week.
The Saturday game.
Okay. Gabe Stoltz of SB Nation's Brew Hoop is the one that wrote this. So this is the direct quote from Dame Lillard. So when Doc came in, he was just like, "You guys don't run this? You guys don't run that? Like, this is stuff we hated to guard against you." And I'll get back to the quote in a second. Doc is referring to when he was the head coach of the Clippers and Dame was on the Blazers. And he would rip them up, right? So continuing the quote, and he just slowly started to put some of those things in action. So I mean, that's good, right? Like, we've talked a ton about Doc Rivers being the home run swing that you make midseason when you make a change as the second seed in the Eastern Conference to fire your head coach. You go out and get a guy like Doc Rivers, who's won an NBA title, who's coached at the highest of levels. And as I always say, his knocks are fair, right? It's been 15, 16 years since he's won a really big game. So it's been a minute. And I understand some of the knocks Doc Rivers gets, but he is a good NBA head coach. And he's the best you're going to get, especially when you're making an in-season change. I was confident all along the Bucks would find a way to figure it out. When you have Damian Lillard, when you have Giannis Antetokounmpo, when you have some of the pieces you have, you just got to figure it out. You got to be one of the best teams in the league. And now, six games out of the break, they are playing like one of the best teams in the league, as they should be viewed as. Now, this is where it gets interesting, is the stretch that's coming up for them in the West Coast. They're taking a California road trip over the course of the next week, which starts tonight against the Golden State Warriors. They go to the Lakers on Friday. They visit the Clippers again, who they just beat on Monday night on Sunday. And then next Tuesday, they head to Sacramento to take on the Kings. So this is a really fascinating stretch for me that I think will truly tell us who this team is, right? What are they made of? What is the ceiling? What are the expectations, and how high can we move them now? Because I think in the All-Star break, I wasn't one of them, but Hunter was. There was a lot of panic when it came to the Bucks' potential and what type of team they would turn into come the postseason. And now out of the All-Star break, they look rejuvenated. They look like a different team. They look like a team that finally has some chemistry. And I think we overplayed that a little bit. Doc Rivers got 2 weeks to come into Milwaukee and try to figure out how to save this team that's viewed as one of the best in the league. Doc Rivers gets a week off, he comes back out, and it seems like there's some fundamental game plan or fundamental game planning and a fundamental change in some of the philosophy, whether that be offensive sets, whether that be some of the things that they're throwing at opponents defensively. It's working. They've held every team under 110 points. They've only allowed 100 points twice since the All-Star break, and that was 106 to the Clippers on Monday and 107 to the Timberwolves in the first game out of the break. It's a team that is playing a whole lot better defensively. And look, I love Pat Bev, and we're going to talk about Pat Bev in a minute with Chris Johnson. But Pat Bev, I don't think he changes everything for you. He's pesky. He's a great defender. He's good at getting under people's skin, which we saw a little bit of on Monday night against the Clippers. But he's a great player. I don't know how much he's changing your trajectory. He's a good ad. I just don't know if he's changing your trajectory from, you know, a team that's underperforming to all of a sudden you're back to championship level. I think some of the philosophy and game plans that Doc Rivers has implemented now is what's changing that. So the hire gets a thumbs up for me. It always did, but it certainly does now as they're 6-0 out of the break. Giannis scares me a little bit, though. We don't have the video from pregame, but it looked like he might have tweaked something in warmups on Monday. So we'll see if he plays tonight against Golden State. But I'm a little bit worried about what's going on with Giannis. But I am not worried about overall what's happening with the Bucks. Speaking of the Bucks, Bucks Plus launched a couple of weeks ago. The Bucks are 6-0 in the Bucks Plus era, and one of the great shows you can hear on the Bucks Plus audio network is Hear District with Marcus Johnson, the Bucks legend, and his son Chris, who joins us now on Mr. Irrelevant. Chris Johnson giving us some time, an NCAA champion during his time at UCLA, and he's wearing the hat. He's got the hat to show for it. Champions made here, his UCLA hat. What's up, Chris? How are you, my man? Appreciate you taking some time to join me today.
I'm good, Alex. How are you?
I'm good. I'm sitting over here, and we're talking about, you know, the month of March and the love we have for both college hoops and obviously as the NBA heats up here. And since your show dropped, the Bucks are 6-0 here, district. The Bucks are 6-0. So let's dive into what's changed a little bit, because I love seeing all the tweets you've been putting out and you know, kind of analyzing some of the stuff Doc Rivers is saying and implementing and some of the philosophy change that's happened since the All-Star break for this team. What do you think, Chris, from your perspective, is the biggest change for the Bucks post All-Star break?
Well, I think that it's a combination of a lot of things, Alex. Doc didn't come in and try to reinvent the wheel with these guys. He came in, empowered the Bucks in their current iteration to be better, to get Pat to go from good to great, right? So how does he do that? Well, he has a philosophy of less is more defensively, where they're focusing more on talking, communication, positioning, veteran-type nuances that sort of help you lock guys down on a consistent basis, especially on the NBA level. The big two, Dame and Giannis, have been absolutely amazing together since around December 1st. You know, they've increased offensive efficiency. Their net efficiency has increased, and they're at about a 28.6 net since the All-Star break. That is through the roof. But for me, Al, for me, it's been about the bench guys. Pat Bev.
Yeah.
Beasley. And Beasley's not a bench guy, but it's sort of the supporting cast that has really impressed me with the Bucks, from whether it be AJ Green, Pat Bev, and of course, Bobby Portis. I mean, this crew, if you look at this roster that the Bucks have, Doc inherited a pretty good team. Make no mistake about it. This team is filled with dogs. Dogs that get after you defensively. They are. Think about it. From Pat Bev, Bobby,
absolutely.
AJ Green.
Absolutely.
AJ Green is a straight up dog, man.
He is.
AJ Green's face always looks like he's been through with Roberto Duran or Sugar Ray Leonard. I might be dating myself. But that dude, I love that dude. And I feel like Rex Kalamian, who is the defensive coordinator, if you will, for Doc, has really come in with a philosophy of playing with physicality within the rules. And if you watch the Bucks closely and how they're able to stifle people defensively, you know, they're trailing on hips, they're bumping, they're tagging, they're using forearms. Me and my dad were talking about it, and I'm sorry for the long-winded answer, but he said on our pod that the Bucks are the most physical team in the NBA, and that is the biggest reason why they've been so dominant coming out the All-Star break.
Yeah, and the physicality has shown over this six-game stretch, Chris. You're so right about that. And never apologize for a long-winded answer, because I spend the entirety of the show spewing BS, so you never apologize when you actually have a very informed opinion on stuff. So you mentioned those dogs, though, Chris, which I'm so fired up to talk about, because Pat Bev has been a nice addition to this team, but I don't know if he's changing the trajectory of this team more with his presence on the court, or if it's maybe just some of the energy and the motivation, and I know you've used the word to describe him in the past as pesky, right? The peskiness he brings to the Bucks. What mentality, and maybe what kind of mentality shift does he bring? Because it seems like his presence might be felt more like in the locker room than maybe even on the court.
Well, Pat Bev is probably one of the most, you know, and this has been throughout his entire career, one of the peskiest players in NBA history in terms of harassing, being bothersome, playing within the rules, though. You know, Pat Bev doesn't really go over the line with the bull crap about trying to fight guys and do all that. But he's going to get up in Paul George's grill, knock the ball away from him, harass him a little bit, and then see what they're talking about. That was the battle of the podcast right there, when that little matchup, Podcast P and Pat Bev going at it. But no, but seriously, though, Al, I mean, Pat Bev, like you had mentioned about, you know, maybe not seeing extended minutes during the playoffs, 10, 12-minute guy. But those 10 to 12 minutes, man, are an eternity for a guy like Pat Bev, who, along with his partner in crime, Bobby Portis, come in and bring an entirely different sort of infectious energy that permeates throughout this entire Bucks roster. Every guy is sort of influenced by this energy. Once Pat Bev... energy. And once Pat Bev and Bobby get going, you can kind of see everybody turning turning up a little bit when them guys get going. And that, to me, has been the biggest difference. Like you said, the locker room, but it's all about the team morale, confidence, and inspiring guys to go hard. And Pat Bev definitely does that.
Yeah, that's a dude I'd want to go to war with, Chris, right? Like that is the definition of Pat Bev. And it's been fun to see, too, because I know there was a little beef with him and Dame prior to his arrival in Milwaukee. And to see them embrace the other night, it's like, okay, beef is squashed. These guys are fighting for the same goal, which is obviously ultimately to win a championship. Go ahead. I just think it's fascinating beef squashed.
Yeah. Think about it. When the guys you're playing against the guy, you hate him, right? You can't stand the guy. But he's on your team, you start to see the method to his madness and why he's so valuable. And Dame is realizing that. And I'm sure Dame knows that. And I'm sure guys around the league know that. Once you get through the antics on Pat Bev, underneath that surface, there's a really solid basketball player that loves the game and can get it going offensively. And is just completely committed on the defensive end.
Yeah, no doubt. You're so right on that. So going back to Doc, I mean, it's such a unique situation, right? It's not often you have a team in second place, which they were. They're back in second place now, but they were in second place at the time they fire Adrian Griffin. And I think it's kind of panic mode, right? It's, okay, who can we go get? So they go get the best available option, which is Doc Rivers. They grab him from ESPN, where he was working at the time. He comes in, and he gets absolutely smashed prior to the All-Star break, right? They're losing left and right. People are saying, Doc can't win a big game. And now, as you mentioned, he kind of gets this break. They start implementing some different things. They're 6-0 since the break. What are your early impressions of Doc Rivers back in Milwaukee for the first time since he played at Marquette?
You know, I think that the pivotal moment for Doc and this Milwaukee Bucks squad was on that trip to Minnesota. When they played against the Timberwolves, and then I think they were supposed to fly back somewhere. They ended up staying in Minnesota, practicing at the University of Minnesota. Mm. And then they spent a lot of time kind of getting guys up to speed on, you know, what Doc's demands were or what Doc's expectations were. Remember, that's the conversation that Doc went to each guy and defined their role within the Bucks unit. Everybody got their role defined. Everybody got told what was expected of them, what will be demanded of them, especially on the defensive end. And I think guys have bought in. So what Doc came in and did, man, was just provide some structure for some guys that really needed and were dying to have some structure, not to throw Dr. Griff under the bus. But you heard it with Giannis throughout his, you know, some of the comments that he would make. You heard it from other players. Just as far as not having an understanding of what was going on, Dame recently mentioned something about, not running the actions that he had ran in Portland, and Doc comes in. He's like, wait a minute, man, you weren't running these actions? Like, you know, what's going on? So all that to be said. And I don't think Doc really, I don't think it's a lot, Alex, that Doc has changed. Sure. I don't think it's a lot. I think he took, you know, the current iteration of the Bucks. He identified some things as a coach, as a leader of men, that he felt like they needed to get better at. I think communication has been tremendous with the Bucks. Mm-hmm. And then the energy side. And I got to keep harping on this, because when you talk about a team with older wings and you have guys like Pat Bev, like Bees, like Bobby Portis, and guys coming in, Gallo bringing in energy, right? That changes the complexion of everything. My point about Gallo had some of his best seasons as a Clipper under Doc Rivers, and I know that he's been much maligned. The signing wasn't met with a lot of just open arms, right? Because you're thinking Gallo, 35, slow, who is he going to guard? But if you've been watching the games, and if you've been watching Gallo surrounded by these units with Pat Bev and this infectious energy, he fits right in. He's not like sticking out like a sore thumb. He's getting stops. He's making plays. He just hasn't been knocking down shots. And I think that's what we kind of judge Gallo off of. But man, this is an entire mindset that Doc Rivers has installed in this team, and guys have responded in the best possible way.
Yeah, I think another name that comes to mind when you mentioned kind of the veteran wings, right, is Jay Crowder and the impact he has.
Jay, how could I forget? Right? How could I forget?
But totally. But the impact he has, really, on the defensive side, but both ends of the floor. And without a guy, and this is where I want to go next, Chris, because it's and we could theorize this together because it's something I've been fascinated by. Chris Middleton hasn't played a lot under Doc Rivers, right? He's been dealing with injuries left and right. I'm fascinated on how they handle his return. Is he a starter? Do they bring him off the bench as a sixth man? And I know I saw somebody chime in on the YouTube chat with the same question. I'm fascinated on how they handle the full return, if we ever get to that point, with Chris Middleton once it does happen.
We talked to Athletic senior writer Eric Name about this on the Here District, asked him the question straight up. And he's like, nah. I think Eric was just saying how the Bucks' best five, you know, is the five that Doc needs to be cultivating, reestablishing chemistry with, the best five. So you don't want to, you know, try to mix and match and mess around with Middleton, because you're going to need Middleton in the playoffs. In a seven-game series, I'm not sure there's any team in the NBA that can beat the current iteration of the Milwaukee Bucks when Middleton comes back. I'm not sure that they're going to lose a seven-game series. So you need to – but the only way they will have this sort of success in the playoffs is if you work Middleton back into the lineup, starting – and get him going, let him find his rhythm and flow with the way things have been going. Because as you know, once you establish in the NBA six-game streak and you sort of have a rhythm rotation, when you bring in another guy, it's going to throw it off for a little bit. But, you know, if he's knocking down shots, that's going to be a big plus. So I don't think they're going to bring Middleton off the bench at all. I think he's going to start as soon as he comes back and get worked right back into the fold.
Yeah, I imagine that's the right choice, right? Like, you mentioned it earlier with Doc, is don't come in and tweak a bunch of stuff, because that's probably going to make you crumble down the road. Clearly, they're finding the rhythm. Without Chris, how can he fit back in is the question, but he is a great player, and I think we lose sight of that sometimes when the Bucks are streaking the way they are. Let me ask you this, Chris. We were talking about this, I think, Monday or Friday on the show. The teams that we fear in the Eastern Conference, maybe not fear, but teams that could be the biggest challenge for the Bucks. The obvious answer is the top seed, the Boston Celtics. And I think Bucks fans have a little bit of PTSD from last year, obviously with the Miami Heat beating them in the first round. Aside from those two teams, does anybody else really worry you in the Eastern Conference? Because I don't know how healthy Joel Embiid will be if/when he does return for Philly. Like, nobody outside of Boston and Miami, the way the Bucks are currently playing, scare me at all come playoff time.
Yeah, the only teams that will scare me, and obviously this is contingent upon Joel Embiid's health, are teams that have really good mobile bigs. So Porzingis, Embiid, guys that will stretch out Brooke, so Brooke can't do his typical drop coverage, which is so effective and important for the Bucks defensively. So I was looking at that on this West Coast swing, just curious to see what the defensive matchups would look like. But to get back to your question, Cleveland scares me. Philly doesn't scare me, but I just, like you said, the Embiid thing is really intriguing. Obviously Boston, obviously the Heat. And then after you get past those guys, there aren't a lot of teams that really bother me at all. As far as the Bucks are concerned, especially when they're locked in like this, and especially the job Doc has been doing with managing minutes, stealing minutes with guys and keeping guys fresh. So we'll see. The Giannis injury is going to be interesting to keep tabs on. I don't know if you guys have any updated info about that. No. I have not heard anything as of late, or especially about tonight's game concerning Giannis. But see, all these things, Doc mentioned it. He said, you know, someone asked him about, you know, what was his best case scenario, I think, going down the stretch. And Doc said something to the effect of, hey, that everybody's healthy, that we go into the playoffs healthy. And so that's sort of Doc's main goal. And however he has to manage the roster to achieve that, he's going to do.
Yeah, just 2 minutes ago from the aforementioned Eric Name, Chris, on Twitter, Giannis' status for tonight remains unchanged. So he's still questionable with the left Achilles tendonitis for tonight against the Warriors. So I'm with you. The other team that comes to mind, even though they're in the play-in, I think, as it stands, is the Indiana Pacers. And obviously that's a team that's dominated the Bucks this year, I think 5-1 in the season series. But overall, I don't know if they'll even have to see them, dependent on how the rest of the season shakes out.
No, we don't know, but what we do know about the Pacers and the Bucks is that there's something there.
There's some juice. There's some real juice.
And I love it. I love this rivalry. It's one of my favorite rivalries in the NBA. Ever since that the ball, game ball controversy from a few months ago, man. This thing, seriously. So whenever I see the Pacers, dude, I'm looking at them guys like just arch rivals, and we got to see what's up. So I love to face the Pacers just because of that series is going to be turned up, man.
No doubt about that. I kind of hope we get it, even though, like I said, 5-1 in the regular season for the Pacers. But yeah, I love a good rivalry, right? And it feels like the Bucks haven't had they have a little bit with the Heat and a little bit with the Celtics now with Drew Holiday over there. But there's some real juice to that rivalry with the Pacers. So
bad blood.
I'd love to see it in May. No doubt about it. All right, Chris. Before we get you out of here, I do want to talk a little UCLA and new look Big Ten and the end of the Pac-12, because I know. So where are you in Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament? The last one ever, is that where you are?
Yeah, so I'm in Las Vegas right now for the women's tournament. The men's tournament, I'll be here for next week. So I'm in Vegas 11 days, dude. So I'm just covering the tournament. I have a YouTube channel. I do a bunch of content for women's basketball. I got a little sister that is going to be a generational type talent. So I'm all in on the women's game as well as the men's game in college. But as far as the Bruins are concerned, on the men's side of things, man, it's been a tough year.
Yeah,
young team took their lumps, you know, led by a lot and against some good teams, and then lost all throughout the season. So we're kind of chalking that up. But we are excited to be going to the Big Ten. The Big Ten for UCLA fans, I know the initial reception was a little mixed, but the sense that I'm getting from everyone, we're excited, man. Because when you are able, we've been in the Pac-12. Let's keep it real.
Right.
So it's Big Ten, SEC, ACC. That's what's up in American collegiate sports. Conferences that are east of California, all those conferences, that's the conferences we care about. That's what we see on ESPN, man. Yep. So we are now in the conversation. Okay, we're going to be having way more exposure, and I'm just excited about going to places like Bloomington, Champaign. You know what I'm saying? I want to see what's up with Madison.
Yeah, you do.
I want to see what's up, man. I want to see what's up with the fans, the rivalries. I love it, man. I've always watched Big Ten basketball from afar. Watched Wisconsin with Bo Ryan and Bronson, and those guys were there back. Eight ball guys. So to be able to compete in this conference against the likes of basketball royalty and some of these programs, man, we're ecstatic.
I love that that's your response, because I think there's mixed reviews, right? Obviously, the enormous conference is a little bit daunting come like conference tournament time next year. That's gonna be a weird look. But when you get here to Madison, Chris, you let me know. I will show you the best time of any Big Ten city.
Absolutely.
Outside of maybe LA, right?
Because I
don't know how much you're going to love West Lafayette where Purdue is, or Piscataway where Rutgers is, but I'll tell you what, Madison, Wisconsin can show you one hell of a time. A little bit different than the other two.
I heard Madison is a place to visit.
It sure is. That's why I've lived here for 3.5 years, no doubt.
No doubt.
Chris, this is awesome, man. Appreciate you taking the time out of your trip. We got to do this again soon as we lead into the NBA playoffs. Before we let you go, you got to tell us about what you got cooking up with your pops, MJ, Marcus Johnson, on the new Here District podcast.
Yeah, so we got the Here District podcast, man. You can find it on Bucks Plus Audio. It's also on Spotify, Apple, Amazon. Me and my dad, we're going to go into our Rolodex, bring in some really high-profile basketball basketball-related guests. We had Eric Name as our first guest. We have a lot more guests in store. And we're going to be chopping up the game, man, from an analytical approach, also sprinkled in with a little bit of basketball experience, and just two guys just talking hoops, man. And it's Here District. Once again, that's on Spotify, and it's through the Bucks Plus Audio Network.
Yeah, Here District, to play on Deer District, but H-E-A-R, if you're looking it up, that's how you spell Here District. With Chris and Marcus Johnson, the father-son duo, the NCAA champs. One of few father-son duos, by the way, to win an NCAA championship.
The only one. The only one at the same school. The only one at the same school.
Oh.
The only one at the same school, Al. Let's put the asterisk there.
I mean, take the asterisk, Chris. That's a victory lap if I've ever heard one, my man. Well, you're the best, dude. This is really fun. I appreciate you taking the time. We'll do it again soon, all right?
Thanks for having me.
He's the best, man. Chris Johnson. You can get him on Twitter as well, at Point Forward Pro, and check out the Here District. Him and Marcus doing some great work with that. That was a really fun conversation with Chris Johnson on all things Bucks. And I love how he was stuck a little bit on the energy. He kept using the word energy. And it's something I used before he jumped on with me. with Pat Bev and Bobby Portis. And like, you see it Monday night at Fiserv when Bobby's on one end of the court, Pat Bev is on the other, and they're just screaming stuff into the crowd at Fiserv Forum. That stuff's important. And I'm not knocking Pat Bev at all when I say I think his impact is more felt within the locker room than it is on the court. His impact's felt on the court. He's a good player. Pesky. Love that word choice by Chris. But he just brings the juice. And juice is important. To go back to our guy, Sonny Wicks. Bring your own juice. BYOJ, the head coach at Green Bay. Love it. Big thanks to Chris Johnson. That was a really fun conversation. Hunter, what'd you think of that? That was a good one.
I absolutely loved it. And it is so fun watching this team now.
Yeah.
And like everything.
Panic meter's gone, huh?
Yeah.
You forgot about the panic meter that you had in May a couple weeks ago?
Yep. It's totally gone now. I've gotten rid of it. It's in the trash. And honestly, especially the quote that I sent you from Damian Lillard, like the fact that they weren't even running things that he was tearing up the Western Conference with under Adrian Griffin is exactly why him being fired was the right move. That alone. Like, how do you not say, oh yeah, I just got two awesome superstars. Let's run some things that this superstar that's coming into my team did to score 40, 50 points regularly on Western Conference teams. Like, that blows my mind that an NBA head coach would just be that, like, single-minded in how they're going to operate things to not even think to do things that made one of the best players in the NBA one of the best players in the NBA.
Bingo. Well said by you. Hey, I got a question for you, by the way. It was texted to me by my buddy Max, who gifted me the Tyler Kolek shirt. He said, is producer Tiny Hands going to the Marquette game tonight? I said, I don't think so. Is that true?
I'm not really thought about it.
Senior night for your favorite player is also what Max said.
Yeah. Oso Iguodaro, senior night. I'm going to be a little... It's going to be a UConn. Weird feeling. Yeah, and it's the fact, one, tickets were ridiculous. So I was just like, I don't know if I can pull the trigger on it. And two, I'm kind of glad that I'm not going, given that Tyler Kolek isn't going to play.
Right.
He's got a weird oblique injury.
Yeah, are they going to get smoked tonight on their home floor?
Probably.
Marquette, UConn? Yeah, I think so too.
I think it's going to be, if they can keep it inside 15, I'm going to honestly feel really good about it.
Okay.
Because you don't have your best player and you're going up against the best team in college basketball. If the rest of the team can keep it semi-competitive the entire game, I'm going to feel really good about where they're at for when he comes back.
Okay. Good stuff. Good stuff from Hunter there. I forgot Marquette UConn was tonight. I feel like I buried the lead a little bit on that one, but that's okay. It happens. All right. I'm excited about this too, man. What a fun show today. There is a ton of quarterback movement in the NFL, or at least impending quarterback movement. A ton of impending quarterback movement in the NFL. We've got former starters, we've got free agents, and of course, we've got the rookie class. How are teams going to fill their quarterback needs? Good thing is, you've got two geniuses on the panel. Me and Hunter Vaughn have 11 quarterback names in front of us, and we are going to tell you, in our humble opinions, some will agree on, I'm sure some will disagree on, which quarterbacks will end up where. So Hunter has compiled the list and ordered it however he wanted of 11 quarterbacks. And I will tell you, as Hunter will, where we think they will end up. Hunter, all yours. Where are we starting?
We're going to start in the same division as the Packers.
Okay.
A guy that is on the screen.
By the way, boy, does it feel good to be king. I'm so glad I don't have to worry about this, because we're gonna name at least 10 teams, if not 11, right?
Yeah.
With the 11 quarterbacks we have, we might name a team twice, I guess, but probably 11 different teams that have a significant need at quarterback, or maybe they're just looking to improve with a veteran. I love that we don't have to worry about this as Packers fans. I am good, man. I've got what seems like a very talented franchise quarterback who just ripped up the league for 9 straight weeks. I am pumped that I don't have to mention the Packers the rest of this segment. Continue.
Yeah, I'm worried that next year the Cowboys will be on this list.
They might be.
But we're going to start with Kirk Cousins. He's 35 years old. Where do you think he goes? Stay in Minnesota or go somewhere else?
Yeah, he's the only one who I'm going to say is... I take that back. He's not going to be the only one I say is stable. I will say Kirk Cousins returns to Minnesota. I think the quarterbacks in the NFC North, spoiler alert for a name we'll talk about later, is Jordan Love, Jared Goff, Kirk Cousins, and Caleb Williams.
See, I have him going to Vegas.
Oh.
Yeah,
I mean, that is a team that needs a quarterback.
Yeah, and I feel like that's going to be a slight upgrade for them from Jimmy Garoppolo. He still gets a high-end receiver with Devontae Adams. I think that's the way that Vegas goes, especially since they're going at number 13 in the draft right now. So I think a lot of these high-end guys that we're going to talk about, they're going to be off the board.
Yeah, that's interesting. Vegas actually isn't a team I really thought about here. Jimmy G is still under contract, correct?
He is.
And they're not in love with Aiden O'Connell.
No. I don't. Other than Jesse Nelson, I don't know anyone that is.
So I have written down all my answers. The Raiders might fall in here. And I do have them written on the right side of my paper, which is teams I didn't pick. Like, I'll give you a spoiler alert. I didn't pick the Cardinals. I feel like they might go get a quarterback if they're not fully committed to Kyler Murray. And I think I'm lower on Kyler Murray than some others. But that's another team that I might throw in here on the fly. Okay, so Kirk Cousins, I say Vikings, you say Raiders. Who's quarterback two?
Number two, again, he's on the screen, Justin Fields.
Mm. Yeah, this one's tough, but I feel like it really boils down to two places. And I will pick the one that I would like to see the most, because I like Justin Fields. I think he's a good quarterback. I think he'll have a change of scenery revitalization in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. I think he's a Steeler.
I have him going to the same place.
Wow.
I think that's just, it makes the most sense. They have a really good defense.
What about the Falcons? I think they make sense too, but I have them going
They do. Yeah, they do, but I have somebody else going there.
Okay. So. I wonder if we'll agree on that as well. Quarterback three.
We're going to go with a rookie, J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, I think a team reaches in the draft for J.J. McCarthy. I think he's a top 10 pick, the way he has been trending. Shoot, I think he's a top 6 pick. I think the New York Giants, who are holding on to pick number 6 in the NFL draft, reach for J.J. McCarthy at 6.
So I got a little bit of insider information from a New York Giants fan. Shout out Tim Haggerty, one of our teammates in our Milwaukee office.
Okay.
He's from New York, huge Giants fan.
Yeah.
He said that a lot of the Giants fans expect them to keep Daniel Jones this year.
Yep.
So I've got McCarthy going to Denver at 12
Denver.
In the draft.
Yeah, interesting. I like that. I have them going a different route rookie-wise, but I think it's Daniel Jones' job.
I think they go like Malik Nabers, the Giants do.
They could.
They try to get him a weapon.
They could. Yeah, very well could, and they could go defense or O-line, right? Like,
yeah.
they have a lot of needs to fill. I wouldn't be shocked, though, if J.J. McCarthy is an early draft pick, even if it's not the Giants. That's a name that is fascinating to me. I don't think he's that good, but he's a winner. He's a winner.
He wins, but I've never seen him make a throw where I'm like, oh, he's the reason that receiver caught that ball.
Okay, so you have him in Denver. That's interesting. Name number four. I think we're going to agree
Baker Mayfield.
Here. We're going to agree here. He's back in Tampa.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. They don't bring back Mike Evans without saying we're doing this to bring back Baker.
Yep, I fully agree.
Number five, Jaden Daniels, guy we should have seen in the Badgers bowl game.
Yeah. I'm so back and forth on this. I don't know if he's going to go two or three, but he's going to be a top three pick. I'm going to say he goes two.
So do I.
Yeah, I think the Commanders take him. I think the Commanders take Jaden Daniels. I think he becomes quarterback two in this draft. Rightfully so. I think he is tremendously talented. But the next name we're going to talk about, I think, falls to number three.
Yep, Drake May.
I have him in New England.
Yep, so do I.
Okay, so we agree on that. I originally wrote Jaden Daniels, Patriots, Drake May, Commanders. I would rather see that, to be honest with you.
I would rather see that as a Cowboys fan.
Yeah, that's fair.
I just have a weird feeling that Jaden Daniels might be the one to like break the kind of curse that happened with RG3. Like
maybe.
They get this highly dynamic quarterback and they don't ruin his career with terrible turf.
I think Jaden Daniels is going to shine wherever he ends up. And maybe the Commanders could use a guy like Jaden Daniels. Like, haven't they waited long enough? Since Kirk Cousins left, and Kirk Cousins wasn't even really Kirk Cousins. I mean, he was fine. He was good. He won a playoff game, I think. But
I feel like they've been waiting since they had Joe Theismann.
Yeah, I mean, RG3 had that rookie, really nice rookie year, and then injuries derailed him. Kirk took over for him, obviously, and was fine, and obviously got the nice deal he got in Minnesota. But they haven't had a true dude, right? Like, Jason Campbell was fine in the 2000s. But that is not a name, by the way, I expected I'd say on the show today.
No.
It's Jason Campbell.
I hated the Cowboys playing against him. He tore them up few times.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Because that's what the Cowboys do.
So we agree. Jaden Daniels goes two to the Commanders. Drake May from UNC goes three to the Patriots. Let's talk another rookie, shall we?
Yeah. Michael Penix Jr.
I, for some reason, feel like we're going to agree on this. Because I have a weird one here. I think he falls.
So do I.
I think he goes to a team that can contend.
Maybe this team could.
But play in a tough division.
Yeah.
With the reigning NFC champion in their division. We still on the same page?
Yeah.
New head coach?
Yeah. No. No, he's still there.
Okay, so we have different teams in the NFC West?
Oh. I'm thinking a different NFC team.
Well, then the... anyway. I have him going to the Seattle Seahawks. Michael Penix stays in the state of Washington. I have him going to Seattle.
I misheard you when you said NFC. Okay. With what division you said. I have him falling all the way to the second round and going to the Vikings.
Ooh. So you have Kirk and Penix in the Vikings.
No, because I have Kirk going to Vegas.
Oh, man. This is chaotic, Hunter.
Yeah, because his injury issues. Your list, he's going to fall.
Your list is anarchy a little bit. I like your list better than mine. I have Penix staying in the state of Washington, though. I think that's fun.
Yeah, I can see that. I feel like Seattle thinks that they're just that high-end piece away. So to use a quarterback and have a young quarterback and try and make it work, I feel like they would rather go like O-line or another receiver or get some help on defense because they might lose their linebackers, like going that route instead and saying, okay, we're going to make the run this way and we'll figure out the quarterback later.
All right, I think the last four names on our list, three of them really are fun. And then the final name is Caleb Williams. We're going to agree on that one. But we'll wait till the end. We'll wait till the end to get to Caleb. What's the next name on the list?
Russell Wilson, 35-year-old quarterback. They've already said it. He's going to be leaving Denver.
Yeah, he got released. He is leaving Denver. Worst trade in NFL history, some would argue.
Oh, that Herschel Walker trade.
We both, yeah, true. But both horrible. We both have left off an obvious spot thus far, and we're on to name eight. So I imagine we're both saying Atlanta for Russ?
Yep.
Okay.
I think they want proven veteran, not veteran QB that still needs to prove something.
So I agree with you. I think this makes the most sense for Russ, is to end up in Atlanta as a veteran. But I wonder if they bring in somebody to compete, because Desmond Ridder is not the guy. Even like Bijan Robinson, the way he talked in interviews over NFL Combine and Super Bowl Radio Row, he was talking pretty freely and openly about the fact that Falcons will have a new quarterback next year. So Ridder's clearly not the guy, and he's not viewed as the guy by his star running back, his young running back, by the way. Russ to Atlanta seems like the most realistic one of any of these to me, outside of Baker returning to Tampa and Kirk returning to Minnesota. I think Russ to Atlanta makes the most sense. But would they bring in then a rookie to compete with Russ or to be mentored by Russ? Because we were talking off the air. I don't envision Russ going somewhere where he has to truly compete.
No.
Right? Could they take a swing at a later round quarterback to compete with Russ? Maybe not compete with Russ, but more be mentored by Russ for a year or two, a la Jordan Love style, right? And if Russ stinks like he did in Denver, maybe they move on to that quarterback earlier than we anticipate. That is a realistic possibility in my mind. Though I have the only Falcons I wrote down was for Russ.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I think they use like a third round pick or something on another quarterback with getting Russ in. And he's, from everything I've ever seen, as much of a dork as Russ is, he seems like the type of guy that understands like, hey, I'm 35 years old. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to be doing this for much longer. I understand that they need to have somebody else coming up. I'm going to try and help him and teach him how to be an NFL quarterback. So that's where I think Atlanta would like to sit on this. Our number nine quarterback, let's stick with a veteran, Ryan Tannehill. He's 36 years old, coming out of Tennessee.
I wrote two answers here. Is that allowed?
You have to pick one.
Retirement. I think Tannehill's done.
You think he's completely done?
I don't think he gets picked up. He might have like a Flacco-esque reemergence, but I think come July, he is not on a roster. So I will say nowhere.
So
maybe the Panthers is the other answer I wrote.
Okay. I just took it as we have to send them somewhere.
Okay.
And I guess to his couch is somewhere.
It is.
But I have him going to Denver. I think he's going to try and make this work one more time.
Denver. And who did you have Denver drafting?
I have them drafting J.J. McCarthy.
So Tannehill, McCarthy. Okay, that's interesting. Yep. I like that.
So then they have somebody who either McCarthy beats him out and proves us wrong, which I have no problem with. I have nothing against the guy. I always feel like I need to say that when I talk about draft prospects.
That's fair.
Like, so then they have someone that can either mentor him or still then, okay, we can get by with this guy. Let's try and figure this out a little bit. And then we have someone who can just sit and learn the process before we have to just throw him into the fire.
Yeah, that's interesting. I like that. I didn't see that one coming. But I like that by you. Denver, a quarterback destination here in the 2024 offseason. All right, two names left.
Bo Nix.
Denver Broncos. That's where I have Bo Nix going. Yeah, that's the team that I've held off on the longest. I have Bo Nix ending up in Denver. Late first. Maybe second.
So I have him going in the second round as well. I have him going to New Orleans in the second round.
I don't think the Saints are going to do anything at quarterback. See, until late. They might bring back Jameis. I know that's a name that's a free agent didn't bring on this list, but he might end up back in New Orleans.
And I thought about that, but I think that they may just say, like, hey, if one of these guys, like I've got Penix falling as well, if one of those two falls to us in the second round and they start sliding and they're sitting in the green room and waiting and waiting and waiting, they may just be like, you know what, let's take one of them. And if they do sit behind Jameis for a year or push Jameis to just play out of his mind, that's not a bad thing, because Jameis isn't a long-term option at quarterback. He's a 2, maybe 3-year option where you get one of these rookies, you've got 4 years out of him for sure.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that's interesting. My mind is in a blender. We've got one name left, but it's the easiest one on the list.
It's Caleb Williams.
Bears.
Yeah, he's going number one overall.
Yeah, he's going number one overall. Wow. Okay, so my mind is fully in a blender. When I pitched this idea to you before the show, I said, you know, there's like 10, 11 names we should talk about that I want to just predict. I just want to sit down and hash it out because I haven't done it yet. And you gave me the sheet. I started writing stuff in. I've got scratches all over the paper because I changed my mind on a couple of them. I don't know how confident I feel about this. We should track this.
We'll hang on to this. I'll put it in my desk because you'll lose it if I
will
leave this up to you.
Yeah, that's very true. I don't know how well I'm going to do. I think I'll get Caleb Williams right. I think I'll get Baker right. I think I'll get Kirk right. And I think I'll get Fields to the Steelers right. The rest of them, no idea.
I think we'll get Jaden Daniels and Drake May correct as well.
I think the Commies might go with Drake May. And speaking of the Commies, I didn't know this until just a second ago. We got SportsCenter on the TV here at the Everlight Solar Studio on ESPN. Ron Rivera works for ESPN now.
Of course he does.
I didn't know that. But he was just breaking down some free agency quarterbacks on the right while we were doing the same thing. So.
Great minds think alike.
Apparently. Yeah, I mean, it is a hot topic, and rightfully so, because nobody knows what the hell is going to happen. I have zero idea. What Strofe learned as we wrap up the show every day, I want to bring up a piece on ESPN.com that I highly recommend you reading if you are a fan of college football. Chris Lowe, the ESPN senior writer covering all things college sports, wrote an incredible article on Alabama's search to eventually hire Kalen DeBoer as the new head coach to replace Nick Saban. And it dates back like 2 years when Saban sat down the athletic director, Greg Byrne, and said, hey, I don't know how long I'm going to do this. We should have a talk every offseason. And 2 years later, he ultimately retires. It took him 48 hours to hire Kalen DeBoer. And I remember how quick it happened, but it was quicker than I remember. Right? Like, it felt like it was a couple days or maybe a week or so. It was like 47 hours and everything that went into it and the list of replacement possibilities they have. So really good piece over at ESPN.com from Chris Lowe on Greg Byrne and hiring Kalen DeBoer as the new head coach to replace Nick Saban and some of the other names that came up and some of the other possibilities that were there. It's a really, really good piece. It's on the front page of ESPN.com. So what I learned was what went into that and everything that goes into a coaching replacement. So highly recommend that over at ESPN.com. All right. The moment you've all been waiting for, the Mr. Relevant Badger Club Burger Bracket rolls on with our friends from Lake Louis Brewing and the delicious Badger Club Amber Lager. We have an enticing 7.
Yeah.
We'll get to what that means in a second. So we just wrapped up the Savory 16 round. 7 local spots have punched their ticket to the enticing 8. Tipsy Cow in Sun Prairie and Tipsy Cow Downtown, both moving on. The Tipsy Cow train rolls on. Byrock, 1855 Saloon and Grill will be facing those locations respectfully. Ope House Pub in Barneveld moves on to the Enticing Eight, taking on 107 State, which topped Madison in the Savory 16. We mentioned earlier in the week, Wanna Bowl and Wanna Key tops Deeks and Stoughton, moving on. So those are your seven. We have a tie-off, which we are going to break this afternoon. We're going to do a 12-hour poll to figure out who's moving on. Monks and Sun Prairie, Brass Ring, they tied 50-50.
Oof. That's tough. It's great because that means they have a bunch of fans.
Right.
But.
A lot of support for both spots. I love both spots. I've spent time in both spots. We went to Brass Ring on Monday, Hunter.
Brass Ring was great. One of my things, I've talked about it before, I am gluten-free.
Yes.
Or gluten-sensitive. I try to very much limit it. And one of the things I love is a place that has a great gluten-free bun. Theirs was excellent. It didn't fall apart on me, especially since I got a barbecue burger, yeah. So you have all the sauce on it. Didn't fall apart at all. Actually had some flavor and some taste. Loved it. And, I mean, I go to Monk's pretty regularly.
You do.
So this
you,
one.
You live right by one, don't you?
I do, over in Middleton. Yeah. And then I even lived by the one in Sun Prairie. So
yeah, as did I for a while, yeah.
It's been like the last almost 4 years now I've been a regular at Monk's.
So over the course of the next couple of days, the Enticing Eight will roll out on Twitter at ESPN Madison, at Lake Louis Beers. We'll have the Enticing Eight polls beginning tomorrow. We need to break a tie, though. Monks and Sun Prairie versus Brass Ring in downtown Madison. Those two will go head-to-head for another 12 hours. We're giving them overtime. Brass Ring, Monks, go head-to-head. Make sure you go vote. It'll be posted momentarily on Twitter, at ESPN Madison. Back with you Friday to talk some college hoops ahead of the Big East Tournament, the Big Ten Tournament, the ACC Tournament. Pac-12 tournament, of course, as we talked a little bit about with Chris Johnson, who was phenomenal on all things Bucks. Really had a fun show today. Appreciate you coming along with us. We'll be back with you Friday beginning at 12:30, talking all things college hoops. We'll talk to you then beginning at 12:30 on the ESPN Madison YouTube, Twitter, Facebook pages. Make sure you subscribe, like, all those good things. You know what to do. Please give it to us, whether that's a thumbs up on Facebook or Twitter or a favorite on YouTube. I don't know. I'm confusing myself. Subscribe.
Just
get notified.
If you see a like or a heart or anything like that, just hit it.
Yeah, what he said. And available wherever you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, all the in-betweens. Back with you Friday at 12:30. It's Mr. Relevant. I'm Alex Stroh. Peace.